Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. I'm delighted this week to be in conversation with Dr. Rosina Wiltshire. Dr. Wiltshire has an extensive career in international development and gender equality. She is the first CARICOM advocate for gender justice. In that capacity, she led the Caribbean multi-country study on gender, masculinity, and violence. She led the OAS Electoral Observer mission to Antigua and Barbuda in 2014 and St. Lucia in 2011. She was appointed Distinguished Fellow of the Sir Arthur Lewis Institute for Social and Economic Research at the University of the West Indies in 2010. From November 2001, she served as the UNDP Resident Representative and UN Resident Coordinator in Barbados and Eastern Caribbean. Dr. Wiltshire's mandate then covered 10 countries and 11 operational programs. She also represents the UN Secretary General as Resident Coordinator of the UN System Agencies, Funds and Programs Resident in Barbados. Dr. Wiltshire is an experienced facilitator in transformational leadership development and has mentored leaders and monitored and evaluated programs. She served in UNDP headquarters from 1994 until leaving in 2001 to take a reassignment to Barbados. Whilst at headquarters, she held a number of posts, including Deputy Assistant Administrator of the Bureau for Development Policy, Chief of Learning, Deputy Director of the Social Development and Poverty Eradication Division, Head of Gender in Development. She coordinated UNDP's substantive position for the Fourth World Conference on Women, Development and Peace in Beijing, and was a member of the official delegation. As Chief of Learning, she led the development of UNDP's Virtual University, which graduated 90 participants worldwide in the first year. Prior to joining UNDP, Dr. Wiltshire was manager of the Gender and Development Programme at an International Development Research Centre, Canada, and an adjunct professor at Colton University. She supported the South African transition team led by Nelson Mandela in mainstreaming gender across the policy spectrum. Dr. Wiltshire lectured at the University of West Indies for 20 years in international politics and international development, and was visiting professor of the Institute for International Development and Cooperation, University of Ottawa, and the Norman Patterson School for International Affairs at Carleton. She was a member of the Planning Committee for the 1991 World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet held in Miami. She was also part of the official delegation and the NGO delegation to the UN Conference on Environment and Development in Rio, 1992. Dr. Wiltshire holds a master's and a PhD in political science, international relations from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, USA, and a BSc economics from UE Mona. She's a Reiki master and is committed to equality, justice, and peace.
That's me.
So yes, I was told I had to interview you. Most vehemently. So I'm delighted you've taken some time to speak to me today. Obviously, I had met Tony and interviewed Tony as well. So you have a great daughter. So great daughters must have great mothers.
Definitely. Excellent. Definitely. I had a wonderful mother.
Thank you.
And father, I must say.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So I would have read your bio, and obviously it's a very distinguished bio. I'm totally honoured, Dr. Wiltshire.
Excellent. I am. And congratulations on this series. I think you're doing a, you know, really important piece of work that needs to happen.
Thank you.
I'm honored to have been invited.
Excellent. And I'm honored to have you. But Dr. Wilshire, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your humble beginnings, please?
Well, I was born in Trinidad to a family of 9 children.
Wow.
I was the 7th of 9, very close to my mother and father.
Okay.
And very supported by them. I'm happily married for the last 30 years and have, as you know, 1 daughter. I raised 3 boys as well, who are my stepchildren.
Right.
And I've always been very independent, loved reading. My mother read to us a lot. And she read interesting things like Marie Curie, who was a physicist and first female Nobel Prize winner, Helen Keller. So I, Count of Monte Cristo, you know, I got introduced to some very interesting people through literature.
Right.
And through my mother.
So your career, it's been very, I'm trying to think, very, I can't say it's diverse, but you've had a very interesting career working in the areas, the fields you have. What has been your key motivator for working within that field?
Well, I first thought I wanted to be a teacher.
Right.
And I went to France after my first degree and taught high school there. And I realized that I was really not equipped to teach 13-year-olds. I love teaching the older students who were more focused and knew what they wanted to do with their lives. So I decided to do my PhD so that I would be able to teach university.
Right.
I also visited the UN. I visited Geneva when I was in France and thought I would like to spend some time in the UN as well.
Okay.
So I've done the things that interested me. I love teaching university and then I worked with an international development center in Ottawa, Canada, and then joined the UN. And I've also done a lot of work with NGOs. My passion is service and making the world a better place.
Right. And in the gender affairs field, why is that such a draw for you?
Well, I recognize that women have really not been equal citizens.
Yes.
And I felt that I could make a difference in the world by working for gender equality, justice, and peace. And so it's been a natural for me.
Right. So within your career, Dr. Wilshire, what has been the most satisfying challenge you've had to overcome?
To overcome?
Yeah.
I did political science, international relations, and I did my PhD in the States at a time when there were very few women in the field.
Yes.
The university that I attended, I was the only black, only female in international relations.
Wow.
And it was not easy, let me put it that way. The political science department at the time had two black people. And we formed a black caucus with mainly white students, of course, because to lobby for the university to bring in more blacks. And I also formed with a few women across the political science department a women's caucus to lobby for them to bring in more women and at least a couple staff.
Right.
And they did bring in 10 blacks after a lot of hemming and hawing, and they hired a woman professor, and I think by the time I left, I think they'd had two by the time I finished my PhD.
Right.
But keeping focus, not allowing anybody to tell me that blacks can't do this and blacks can't do that, or a woman, you know, why would a woman want to be doing political science, international relations?
Yes.
Which I got from even my peers. I really feel proud that I was able to keep focused and not let any of the naysayers or the detractors keep me from achieving my goal.
Right. And what kept you so focused? What drove you to keep on pushing forward?
Well, I started out knowing that I needed my PhD. I wanted to teach, and nobody was going to stop me from doing that. That I wasn't going to make their problem my problem.
Wow.
So I've always been pretty determined and put barriers in my way.
So
I am going to find a way around them.
so being determined even back then in the environment you're in, how did that come across to I suppose in the general populace? Because even now, as a woman being pretty determined, you're in that double bind situation where, you know, if you are determined and are driven, you're seen as a, you know, BITCH, you know, it's not a positive. So how was it viewed back then for you?
I you know, when I was small, I started going to primary school very young.
Right.
And at around 5, I had two friends who would tell me that, you know, I had to plait my hair. They had straight hair. They didn't need to plait their hair. And my mother would say, don't worry with them. They don't know any better.
Yeah.
You have to teach them. So my attitude to people who did not actually, they don't know better. I need to teach them.
Right.
And I need to keep focused. Their opinion of me is really none of my business, and I don't make their problems
your problems,
my problems.
Right.
So keep. I also you know, if I feel that I'm doing the right thing,
yeah,
I just keep going. So okay. People's spin on that is really not my business. I try to do the right thing, treat every human being with respect, and respect myself. And that's my bottom line.
Right. And Dr. Wilshire, has there been a time where you've confronted a challenge? Because I'm assuming there's been lots of challenges in your career, but things have gone horribly wrong, and it's... how do you manage those situations and just deal with the confidence? How it can impact on your confidence when times have got tough?
Well, I mentioned before that we'd formed the caucus.
Yes.
Because the Black caucus, there were mainly white students in that caucus, and the university brought in 10 Black students.
Right.
You know, they kept telling the two of us Blacks who were West Indians that we were different, that Blacks, you know, we didn't understand, Blacks wouldn't be able to cope. And they really gave the 10 students who came in a very, very difficult time.
Right.
And I kept asking myself whether I had done the right thing, because, you know, people were not, they were not treated respectfully. Their grades were, it was tough. You know, yes. There was one woman who was a grandmother. She said, you know, I don't need to put up with this disrespect. She actually had a master's. And I could see several of the students really, the emotional, psychological, what I would call abuse.
Right.
And the unfair way in which they were treated. I asked myself whether, I'm Anglican, I speak about God, and I said, you know, God, have I done the right thing in trying to do what I think is right and promote equality, and so have I exposed these people to have I gone too far? Have I, you know?
Yes.
But I met one of them at a conference. One of the women, she had become a Chinese scholar. Wow. And was advising the, you know, investors, government. I kept touch with some of the others, and it was like, no, you haven't done the wrong thing. Yeah. They're resilient, and you can't control the consequences of your actions. You can only do what you think is right and let go.
Yes.
So yes. So I would say that was the time when I really questioned whether I'd done the right thing.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
Whether things were as I had envisaged them.
So if you could go back and change one thing, what would it be and why?
Before I speak about that, I want to talk. You asked me about my biggest career triumph.
Yes, yes.
And I talked about the time at university, but really the piece that I really feel was a triumph was my work with the South Africa government after Mandela was released from prison.
Yes.
I was working on behalf of the Canadian Research Institute. It was still under apartheid, and the formal foreign ministry couldn't be involved, but the International Development Research Center had an office in South Africa, and I was head of gender.
Right.
So I worked with the Mandela team, Frenny Jeanwala, who became Speaker of the House, in helping to shape the South Africa constitution so that it better reflected gender.
It's amazing.
And we went across the country asking women what they would want to see in the constitution. I also sort of lobbied with Frenny, suggested that the best way to move forward was to at least have one third of the parliament. And in this case, the party list female,
right.
So that when they got into government, you would not just have, it would not just be the racial dimension that they were able to address, but having that one third female,
yes,
would actually give them the possibility of really balancing the governance framework and addressing gender and peace more effectively. At first, Mandela said no way to the one third, and then he came back and he said to Frenny, you know, I was wrong, and he agreed. So, yeah. And I also worked with Rwanda to promote the one third woman in parliament, and today Rwanda is one of the has the largest percentage of women in parliament and is doing brilliantly.
Wow.
In spite of all of the problems in the world, economically they're thriving. So I would say that was one of my biggest career triumphs.
And that is pretty groundbreaking, because I can't think of any other parliaments. I'm looking like in Antigua, where I'm based, where I live, and we're just going through election, just had a snap election being called. And for each party, for the ruling party, I can see there's one female MP or candidate. And I don't think it's much better for the other parties. So to see a third, that is pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I really feel proud of that. And I'm still working in the Caribbean to get them to follow suit.
I think that's going to be very that sounds like to be very tough. So I was going to say, from a Caribbean perspective, what are the biggest barriers are you finding with respect to having the one-third gender representation?
Well, what happened was that the Caribbean was ahead of the game. I mean, we had one of the first female prime ministers, Eugenia Charles. We were way ahead of the game. Women were educated early. And I think we became so comfortable.
Right. That
I don't know if you know the story of the tortoise and the hare.
Yes.
You know, the hare runs along and the tortoise plods along. So the country of Latin America, Africa, Asia, the Scandinavian countries were way ahead quite early. But the others knew that they had work to do, and the Caribbean said, oh, but we are fine. You know, we don't need any special, and this is including women, you know, we don't want any special measures. We don't need them. But the barriers are absolutely strong, even in the Caribbean, where women are well educated and seemingly doing well. The resistance to women in leadership is quite strong.
Yes.
And what we have found is that without the special measures, it's like, you know, you're going up a mountain and you're climbing back down, because even where you make advances, as in Suriname, in Guyana does have a one-third framework, but there's some, you know, in Barbados, you had a female deputy prime minister, and we have had Jamaica female prime minister. There is a strong resistance to women in leadership. So, you know, the men, you know, the men started to talk about, okay, what about the men? You know, the men are doing it. They saw it as an either or, and that if women got ahead, it meant that men were disadvantaged, rather than seeing it as a national gain for everybody if you had half of the population represented equitably, and that everything, including the economy and the society generally, issues of balance, those would be addressed, health, not it's the social, political, economic well-being of the countries would be enhanced by having better fairer representation of women, it became an the men dug in their heels, and a lot of women really have also not been, I mean, no system of inequality can be upheld if a majority of the population doesn't uphold it. So women are as much part of the, the problematic as the men are.
Yes.
And until we wake up and recognize that this is just about justice, human rights, and the betterment of every single citizen.
Yes.
We will not move forward.
Yes. Yeah, can let me just expand on that, because I was going to say, because obviously 50% of the countries are women. So, you know, like you say, if the populace moved forward, then women could be more empowered. So what do you think stops women, for want of a better phrase, supporting women?
Well, you know, after colonialism, a lot of blacks, during slavery was people give up their power, and a lot of women have given up their power, and they socialize the women and the men into inequality. You know, so we buy into mental oppression or mental slavery we have to emancipate ourselves from mental oppression and recognize that we are equal, that we can do anything. Every human is equal, and it is in the interest of all to have equal representation in government. It is a human right. It is, and it is in the interest of all.
Okay. Thank you for that. So going back into my questions. So now looking back on all that, if you could go back and change one thing, what would it be and why?
I see every experience as a lesson and a gift.
Excellent.
I never look back. I really take the story of Lot's wife looking back and this and turning into stone as a symbolic message of how we need to be in this world. That if I look back, I cannot enjoy the present or move forward.
Yeah.
So looking back is not something that I do.
Okay. So Dr. Wiltshire, so share with us a success quote or mantra that you use and why it's meaningful to you.
A quote useful or meaningful to me, or leadership itself. Leadership is not a position, it's a way of life.
Okay.
And I'm either, that's one of the things that, and the other thing is take nothing personally. It's not about you.
It's not about you. So where does that come into play mostly for you?
What, it's not about me?
Yes.
Well, you know, you asked about if people thinking about my being bossy or people, you know, having attitudes or doing stuff that may not be, you know, kind, or it's never about me. It's everybody is acting from their own understanding of life and their own sense of what it is.
Right.
So it's not about me. It's never about me. And if I don't take things personally, then I'm not sort of focused on what people are doing or saying or thinking.
Right.
It's really not about me.
Excellent, excellent. So, Dr. Walsh, you talked about reading a lot when you were younger and a lot of the classics. But has there been a book that's influenced you throughout your career journey? And what would it be, and what's been the learning you've taken from it?
Well, I've read there's some books well, let me just say there's one book now, because okay. Some of the books that I've read, Camus, The Stranger, Dostoevsky, The Brothers Karamazov, I learn about the world through books.
Right.
And I learned that some people were dealt unfair hands, and they tried to do the right thing anyhow.
Right.
That it was important to actually stand up for what you thought was right, and to stand up against oppression, no matter what the consequences.
Okay.
The book that most recently the Four Agreements, which is, and it's, you know, take nothing personally, do your best, be honest, and give gratitude.
Right.
And that sort of sums the lessons that I try to integrate and I share with everyone. Just do your best, be honest, take nothing personally, and be grateful.
Right. That's great. That's great. That's great. And it's called The Four Agreements?
The Four Agreements.
Okay. I have to look that one up. So what advice would you give to your teenage self now, Dr. Wilshire?
The advice would be, you know, stay strong and focused. Do not worry.
Yes.
Do not give up your power, and do not tolerate abuse in any form.
Right. Okay. And why would those be important to you?
Well, it's so easy when you're a teenager to want to follow the crowd and wonder what will become of you. And sometimes you just need to know that everything will be all right.
Yes.
That you are not, the only person you have control over is yourself. You're not in control of anybody else. And you never follow, my mother always said, you are a leader, not a follower. So don't try to follow the crowd.
Yeah.
Yes. And I've told I've told my daughter that, you know, when they say, well, everybody's doing this, everybody's watching this, you know, I say, you are not everybody. You know, you are unique, and you have to make your own decisions.
Yes.
You're a leader, not a follower.
Yeah. And I think it's even harder, I think, for, I suppose, teenagers these years in the world of social media and all the different outside external influences. I certainly didn't have when I was younger. So I think it takes great character and strength to, in this, I suppose, this day and age, to be a leader and, you know, not be a sheep.
Right.
Should not be a sheep. So, Dr. Walsh, if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
Well, I chose Dame Nita Barrow and Nelson Mandela.
Okay, so two.
Because of their humility, their integrity, and their service to humanity. Those two people, you know, I mean, Dame Nita was, I met a long time ago, and she was just so humble.
Right.
And so sharing in her gifts, you know, she mentored so many, so many. And yeah. Nelson Mandela was one of the most humble people I knew, you know, you would meet him and he would not have any, he didn't have any airs or graces. Yes. He didn't, you know, want to know who you were before he treated you with respect. Those two people, as I said, their humility, integrity, and service to humanity.
Excellent, excellent. And what would be the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
That I'm strong, yeah. resilient, and committed to peace and justice.
Excellent. Now they just rolled off your tongue there. But what would you say are your imperfections, Dr. Wilson? How do you embrace them?
Well, every strength can be a weakness, and okay. strength requires flexibility.
Yes.
And I have sometimes in my life enabled dependency in an attempt to protect those whom I thought were weak.
Okay.
If you don't demand excellence of everybody and you decide, but this person can't do it because there's something in their past or whatever, they can't do any better, yes. then you actually weaken them further, or you don't enable them to ever stand on their feet, and right. and you're not doing them a favor.
Yes.
So one of my weaknesses, which I have had to really work on, is the not enabling.
And right.
I am a Reiki master, and as part of my training, I did a course in Aikido with Ki, where we had to use swords with a partner.
Okay.
And you know, you hit the, we use wooden swords, of course.
Right.
But you hit the person as hard as possible. And it was interesting because some partners, we changed partners, some partners we decided, okay, they can defend themselves, so you hit. And you actually had a great you worked with them as equals. And then for some reason you would meet someone and you say, oh, this person can't really. And you sort of try to avoid hitting them. And they would say, no, you know, really hit me, because that is the only way that I can become better.
Right.
And the teacher, as part of the lesson, would say, be careful of the unspoken agreements, because if you have to demand excellence of yourself and the other, and assume that the other is up to the task.
Right.
So it has been a lesson for me in my raising of children, with my staff. If you demand excellence, and people yes. tend to rise to the challenge.
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely. Definitely. So what, see, in your, as I said, your very, very dynamic career, what would you say are the three key pieces of advice that you have for, one, a better word, maintaining a work-life balance, but basically making sure you don't neglect the persons or the activities that are most important to you?
Nobody ever died wishing they spent more time in the office.
Very true. Very true.
Take care of your, you know, I say to people on the plane, they say, put on your mask first.
Yes.
And it is the best advice that anybody can give. You can't help somebody if you don't have your mask on first.
Yes.
So you have to take care of your body. Sleep is essential. Eating on time is essential. And exercise is essential. And so eat well and on time, sleep, and don't, and exercise. You cannot undermine your body and expect to function effectively.
Yes.
And so I tell people, we take more better care of our cars than we do of our bodies, and we
Very
expect
true.
The bodies to keep functioning.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a great piece of advice there, definitely a great piece of advice. So, Dr. Wilshire, what's your definition of success?
Self-discipline, honest, kindness. So I would say a self-disciplined, honest, kind human being.
Right.
Who strives for excellence and shows gratitude and enjoys living.
Okay.
That, yeah. Somebody dies, I say, if they've done that, no matter where they are, I can celebrate. I feel good. I can celebrate their life. I feel sorry for people. And this is regardless of title, position, held.
Yes.
Who really go through life burdened, ungrateful, feeling entitled, not enjoying their lives, and
yes,
who are not disciplined or honest or yes, kind.
Life
is worth living joyfully.
Definitely. And we only have once to make the most of it.
Exactly. So that's my definition of a successful human being.
Excellent.
A successful life.
Excellent. And lastly for you, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
It does. That makes no sense to me. The notion of hero suggests separation from my fellow human beings.
Right.
And so I don't want to be anybody's hero and certainly can't be my own hero.
Fantastic.
Role model is a word that I relate more to.
Okay.
And being my own role model is not useful for my own growth. It's a contradiction in terms.
Excellent.
So for me, we all play in parts in this a wonderful human drama.
Yes.
And the moment we get caught in taking ourselves too seriously, we lose the plot.
No, I'm loving your answer, because that's the first time anybody has come back to me and says, no, you know, everybody's always had an answer. So I love, thank you so much for that response. It was great. Now, that was my last question, Dr. Wiltshire. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, is there a way they can do that after hearing this podcast?
My email, I'm on email wherever I am in the world. So okay. Email is the best way.
Okay.
I promise to respond. I respond in a timely fashion to email.
Excellent. Yeah. What I will do is I'll put the email link in the show notes. So if anybody wants to contact you, they can do so after the show. But so, as I said, that was my last question, Dr. Wiltshire, and I'm absolutely delighted you took time out to speak to me today. It was very illuminating. And I'm very honored you took the time today. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Excellent.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
That was a really inspiring conversation with Dr. Rosina Wiltshire. It made me realize how far we have come. But on the other hand, we still have so far to go as women, especially when it comes to things like gender equality, or even in the boardroom, taking our seat at the table and being comfortable doing so. That's one of the premises of actually recording Phenomenal Woman, is that I get to share the messages and the journeys of women who have gone before us to try and make it a little easier for the women who are there to go ahead of us. So as ever, I'm asking your support to share the podcast, share the message, keep rating, subscribing, commenting, and sharing on all the podcast platforms. And if there are any areas that you have that resonated with you throughout the interview, like you need some more confidence in achieving certain goals you set for yourself, or you want to take the next step on that career ladder, you want to make that important decision, that important move, give me a call, drop me a line. We can book a quick consult call and we can have a chat as to how I can help you on that journey. So thank you so much for tuning in this week. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.